should be Guru Nasashat. No one should become a guru. No one should become a political leader. No one should become a father, a mother, a relative, a teacher. That's already mentioned. What else? A demigod. Unless you can deliver your dependence from death. That's the requirement. And of course, see, if parents, we always want the best for our children. And so certainly if we can deliver our children from death, that's what a benediction that is. It's a shame you give your children everything else, good education, and then they have to die. If you could stop them from that, wouldn't you do it? I mean, you know, you guard them, you send them to the doctor, you teach them to look both ways before they cross the street, you care for them, and still they have to die. But that's preventable by training them in Krishna consciousness. So that's really, Prabhupada says, the duty of the parents. And he mentions also that of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur prayed for a ray of Vishnu and had Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati as his child. So Prabhupada read this, he had Prajumna read this purport, and then Prabhupada gave this class, and this is the entire class. There's just a small group of householders here in Tehran. This is the entire class. He said, so householder life is not condemned. It is required. If there is no householder, then where from the saintly persons will come? They will not drop from the sky. So everything is required. In our society, we have got householders, we have got brahmacharis, we have got sannyasis. So Krishna consciousness movement is a very scientific movement for the total benefit of human society. If it is properly carried out, then everyone will be satisfied and happy and go back home, back to Godhead. Thank you. That was the entire Bhagavatam class. One of the shortest Bhagavatam classes he ever gave. But that's it. So that's that's one of the major duties. So, and that begins, you know, from conception. How to produce such a children. Prabhupada says there is, later on, you'll find one section where Prabhupada refers to it as the science. The birth of a human being, he says, is a great science. How to do this. And so the description is there. So what I'd like everybody to do, this is your homework, please go through and read these, and whatever doubts, misgivings, questions you have, write them down so that we can discuss it. As I said, this what he says about this, about how to conduct householder life at home, how sexual relations should be conducted, how money matters should be managed. It's a pretty serious business and also a challenge. But we should at least, the first thing we got to do is understand what the standards are. This is what Prabhupada taught. Then we have to accept those standards, and then we have to see to do. Well, here's where I am now. Here's where I ought to be. Now let's make a plan to get from point A to point B. There's no real, the real problem isn't the gap between where we are and where we ought to be. Now, the real problem is we don't acknowledge the gap and make a plan to get to where we should be. So first we have to get clear about these, the standards that Prabhupada gave us. So here, these are all these quotations about family life is good, but it's family life under certain conditions, and we should become clear about what those actual conditions are. Okay, so that's our assignment. Now we haven't had any time at all. Mostly we've talked in general about the process of self-realization, and as far as detailed questions about life in the household or ashram, maybe we shouldn't entertain those today. We should have a chance to read this. Maybe your questions will be answered. And when I have discussions on this, maybe they'll be more relevant later on. But one thing is that of course people will be able to ask questions. We can pass this microphone around. But also, if you're too shy, you can write them down and pass them up. Yeah. If you know you want to ask something, yeah, you can do it that one. But if we want to, we have a half an hour, and maybe if anyone has any questions, especially about what I've said, you can bring them forward now. Yeah.
Can we send that?
Earlier, you think about that we experience ourselves as souls. Is it possible to clarify how do we function on the status of spirit soul?
Yeah, of course. Actually, and it's true, to experience ourselves as a soul, we have to act like a soul. And the way a soul acts is engages in the service of the Supreme Soul. So that's actually our requirement. The soul is by nature active, not inactive. So what are the activities of the soul? Now we know the activities of someone who identifies himself with a material body, those are the activities of sense gratification. And actually the activities of the soul are also sense gratification. But it is Krishna's senses that are gratified. When Prabhupada was asked the meaning of life, you know, his answer was, the meaning of life is to enjoy. But spiritual life means that the center of enjoyment is Krishna. So one thing of false ego is that I have made myself the center of enjoyment. And I directly try to enjoy by satisfying my own senses. Directly. This process is actually the cause of my suffering. When I realize who I am, that I'm not this body, that I'm spirit soul, and I'm part and parcel of Krishna, then the only way to my own satisfaction goes through Krishna. So actually what I have to really learn is that the less I think of my own satisfaction, and the more I think of Krishna's satisfaction, the more I actually get satisfied. And if I forget Krishna's satisfaction just to tend to my own, the more miserable I get. So, let me use an example we have to undergo a kind of Copernican revolution. Of course, we know the Copernican revolution is dubious, but anyway, the idea is that even if we believe in God, we still may not be Krishna conscious, because I think that I'm in the center and God is kind of orbiting around me, and that his business is to satisfy my senses. So I'm still the center of enjoyment. And God is out there as the auto supplier for my sense gratification. That's not Krishna consciousness. That may be a pious karmi, but it's not a devotee. A devotee, he orbits around Krishna. Krishna is in the center. He's the center of enjoyment. And I'm now as avid or eager to satisfy Krishna's sense as I used to be to satisfy my own. Then I become satisfied. So there has to be this shift in consciousness to where Krishna is in the center. Then we are fully able to appreciate ourselves as spiritual beings. So that's the good follow-up question. Okay? Anything else? Yeah, back there.
Sometimes, since we like practicing Krishna consciousness, we like say that it's not easy to say. I mean that I'm not this body, but in practice, we find it's hard. and it causes problems that some people find that they are interested maybe to take spiritual life, but because of, let's say, maybe for instance, one is saying, I'm not this body, but on a practical level is pretending to be.
On what?
Is pretending to be a body, I mean, to be the body. Then if I, for someone who does not know anything about Krishna consciousness, for instance, the nature of people, they are shy by nature, so it's not easy for them to just, I mean, to come to the process of Krishna consciousness because of having that.
Because of thinking that they are their body or not understanding how they're not the body?
Because of thinking that they might be thought that they are different bodies. Mm-hmm. So
I'm not so sure I understand. Somebody,
I'm saying because they are thinking that, I mean, they won't be accepted as
socially.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I guess most social relationships are on the basis of the material body. Who's my friends? Who's my family? Who's my community? That's all on the basis of the body. Right? And that's what's causing so many problems, because people are divided. I'm black, I'm white, I'm male, I'm female, I'm old, I'm young, I'm rich, I'm poor, I'm smart, I'm stupid. All this is... that's also the body, you know? We're not the mind either. Right? So, one problem is that... a spiritual society is a society in which people are relating to each other not on the bodily platform. All right? And if you look at the Grahastha ashram, most of us get together, naturally we get together, a man and a woman. There's a bodily relationship. And we're relating to each other as male, as female, because there's some sexual desire there. We're on that platform. But if we want to be successful, we have to get off of this platform. So how do we get off of the platform? Even though, and that's a, so you know, husband and wife is a social relation, or the relationship among the devotees. How does that not be a bodily relationship? Because it has to be that in every relationship, you know, you get a relationship between any two people, say the husband and the wife, if there's just these two, it's on the bodily platform. There has to be, you know, the middle term, who's Krishna. So all relationships are a triad. They're no dyadic relationships. But in all the relationships that we have, Krishna has to be the middle term. That means to say, I'm related to you and you're related to me because we both are related to Krishna. So that gradually, or at least over the course of time, I have to stop seeing my wife as my wife and more as Krishna's servant. She has to stop seeing me as her husband and more as Krishna's servant. And together we're serving Krishna. Here's the child, so in the beginning it's our sweet, cuddly, dear little child. But I have to more and more think that this is actually Krishna's child. That in the relationship between me and my child, Krishna's also the middle term. This is Krishna's child. I'm Krishna's servant. This spirit soul has been given to me for some time. And really, the Grahastha ashram is really a long-term bhakta program. And that I have a chance of getting at these kids really early. And that therefore my responsibility is to train them not to be my devotees, or not to serve me, or not to gratify my senses, but to gratify Krishna's senses. So I think that if in the social relations Krishna is always the middle term, then those social relationships will come off the bodily platform. Certainly it's possible to have a relationship with a devotee that's Maya, whether it's myself and my wife, or whether it's just two men together in the Brahmacharya ashram, they can be related to each other just on sense gratification. It's because they like each other's jokes or attract to each other's personality or whatever it may be. Or they used to be buddies when they were in school or something like that. But there has to be change. There has to be a relationship of service. Together, we are serving Krishna. So there's no need to give up social relations. Those social relations that we form that doesn't have Krishna in the center, we can't really be that serious about. For convention's sake, say we may have family members who aren't devotees. So we don't want to create a big disturbance. We don't want to get people a low opinion of Krishna consciousness. So we maintain these relationships. And we try to do so so that they're nicely conducted wherever possible. But we cannot take them ultimately as serious because they're on the bodily platform. Because we can't really relate to that person because it's simply on the basis of the body. But to those people who are serving Krishna and I'm serving Krishna, then we have a real relationship. Because actually that relationship will outlast the body. You know, Prabhupada said that, and there was one letter to Prabhupada, he said that we are eternal associates. He said, there is another ISKCON in the spiritual world. Because all the devotees are going back to Godhead. He said, only Mr. Nair must stay. Mr. Nair was the person who he had problems with at the Bombay property. He said, Mr. Nair must stay. So he said, we are eternal associates. There's another ISKCON in the spiritual world. Although sometimes you have to say, but no GBC. It won't be, maybe it'll be a better ISKCON than what we know down here. But so that's a society. But if we're related to each other on the bodily platform, then what is our relationship? As soon as the body goes, the relationship is finished. But if related to each other on the spiritual platform, then that relationship is permanent. So, and especially in a family, if the wife is Krishna conscious, if the husband is Krishna conscious, if the children is Krishna conscious, then we're eternal associates. In one sense, we give up this relationship on the bodily platform. So by actually going to another relationship, I mean, you can't give up an inferior relationship unless you have a superior one. So we go to that relationship in the society of Krishna. We give up our material relationship, and then we're eternal associates. But the materialists who are attached on the material platform, oh, they want to be together forever. They want to be, they never want to give up their family attachments. But what happens at the time of death? They get scattered to the karmic winds. You know, the wife takes birth as a camel, the husband takes birth as a snake, the kids got God knows where. They're lost. They never come together again. You know, the description is there, like material associates, we're like straws in a stream or a flood. You know, the whirlpool brings some straws together and then they fling apart and they're scattered. But if we actually form these relationships on the basis of Krishna, then we're eternal associates. And we'll never be separated. But it really has to be Krishna conscious, and that relationship has to be a relation of service. That's the real society. It's true, it's possible to be in a spiritual society and remain in Maya. It's been done quite successfully. But you don't have to remain in Maya. Outside of ISKCON, it's very hard not to be in Maya. So in an ISKCON society, you can actually keep your head above the illusory energy if that's what you want to do. All the facility is there. We have Krishna's there. We are actually in the company of serving Krishna. In the form of Radha Radhanath. That's Krishna for us. It's not that Krishna's off somewhere in the spiritual sky. He's right here so we can see him, touch him, bathe him, feed him. Radhanatha is Radhanatha is Krishna for us. That's the way Krishna is manifest to us. There's a society around Krishna. It's no different, you know, Prabhupada, it's no different. Actually, it's no different. If you remove the veil of illusion, you'll see that it is no different from Vaikuntha. We are already in that society. We just don't know it yet. Or not entirely, anyway. Okay. Here is a written question. What kind of rules or regulation apply to the female who is in Krishna consciousness but her husband is not active Krishna conscious devotee but not unfavorable? How is one supposed to serve her husband without losing her spiritual advancement as her ultimate goal and not get entangled in sense gratification? Well, that's a tricky question. It's always difficult when one spouse is a devotee and the other isn't. I don't know if I can give a kind of general overall advice that applies to everybody across the board. Anytime I come across a situation, I found out that there's a kind of different strategy depends on the people involved, who one is, who the wife is, who the husband is, and so on like that. I really can't give a general answer for this question. Many times these things can be carried out pretty successfully. I've seen I knew one woman in our community who was in that sort of situation, and she was just very determined, and ultimately she converted her husband. I guess that's the best outcome, that both become devotees. But there's always a problem, or both are devotees but one is one much more serious than the other. That also leads to difficulties and complications. But this is a difficult situation. You'll find that somewhere in here, Prabhupada says something about at least one condition here. Let me see. One of these quotations is along these lines. I can't find that where it is right now. But anyway, I'll keep a hold of this. Maybe we'll return to this one a little later on after we've had more discussion. Or I can talk to a person one-on-one. You want to say something about that?
Yeah,
why don't you give me, I'll give you this one.
I know one lady who wrote to Srila Prabhupada with that question, and he wrote her back a really nice letter and said that by the sincere chanting of the Hare Krishna, one can liberate his family. So she said, just like Prahlad Maharaj, from his sincere chanting, he actually liberated his father. A great demon, Hiranyakashipu was a great demon. So he told her just to stay in her situation and chant very sincerely and try to cook and offer Krishna prasadam as much as possible. So it was very strange, actually. I know the individual, and I think in the end he actually became a much more pious, successful person even than her. So I think we can take that example from Prahlad.
That's good, thank you. If you look on page 10, under the heading, I'm not going to read it now, there's not enough time, but under the heading Domestic Bliss, this is from Canto 7, there's a number of verses describing a chaste wife, Sadhvi. So text 28 describes many characteristics of a chaste wife. Should not be greedy, satisfied in all circumstances, expert in handling household affairs, fully conversant with religious principles. She should speak pleasingly and truthfully and should be very careful and always clean and pure. Thus, a chaste woman should engage with affection in the service of a husband who is not fallen. And then Prabhupada has a discussion, which you can read, about what this means. And then, so look at that, see if it applies, because it's also, you know, that has to be applied carefully. So that's also some guidance on this matter. But it's definitely true that a woman is not obligated to serve a husband who's fallen. But there's a question about the degree of fallenness or how permanent it is and all those other kinds of things. So it requires application. But anyway, there's a general principle. Anyone else?
In a letter to Tamar Krishnamurti, Srila Prabhupada says...
Okay.
In a letter to Tamar Krishnamurti, Srila Prabhupada says that household life means that 75% one may not go back to Godhead.
What?
That household life means that 75% one may not go back to Godhead. Can you please comment on this?
I'd have to look at the letter. I'll look it up
on... It's in the Brahmachari Reader.
Huh?
It's in the Brahmachari Reader. By Bhakti Vikas Swami.
Uh-huh. I'm sure the letter's in folio, huh? Huh? Well, I mean, maybe that's the statistics. Did he say what the statistics were for those who take sannyas? There are many statements that Prabhupada made at different times in different places, and it's genuinely true that if one can be a lifelong brahmachari and never get married, it's better. But it's worse to be a brahmachari and not be an honest brahmachari. Then you're in a worse position. A dishonest brahmachari is in a much worse position than an honest householder. Because Prabhupada says this very clearly. He's in talking about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the way he chastised Haridas Jr., he was so heavy with him. And Prabhupada said the problem wasn't so much that he was talking to or having some association with a woman, but that he was in the renounced order of life and pretending to be advanced but really wasn't. And so Prabhupada quotes Bhaktisiddhanta as saying the first qualification of a devotee is sarlata. He says sarlata means simplicity. He said the opposite of simplicity is duplicity. So that one has to be honest. And in another place, this was so heavy, actually, that this was originally appeared in the introduction of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And then when a devotee who wasn't particularly honest edited it, he took it out. So to find this, you have to go back to the first edition of Teachings of Lord Chaitanya. It was originally in a lecture that Prabhupada gave. And in talking about the same thing, he said something to the effect that that Lord Chaitanya was very happy about honest householders. He encouraged them, he gave names to their children, and he didn't mind at all. But with a dishonest person in the renounced order of life, he was very heavy. And then he said that Lord Chaitanya has no use or words for that effect or cannot help or do anything for. He said, one who cheats by the method of drinking water underwater while taking a bath on a fast day. In other words, one is advertised, now I'm going to engage, you know, as Nirjala Ekadasi, and I won't touch water, right? That's your fast vow, no water, Nirjala. But then when you go into the pond or the tank to take your bath, you go underwater. So while advertising oneself one way is actually something else. That is devastating. That's if our honest position is householder life, then let us be honest householders, and let's say put ourselves in the 25% and go back to Godhead if that's that's the success rate. That's right. I think 25% is pretty good, actually. I mean, but that way also, yeah, I think 25% is all right. We can do that. Maybe the 75% will all be in America.